Hey, welcome back to the Unschool Files podcast. I'm your host, Megan, and you are listening to Season 2, Episode 3. In Season 2 of the podcast, we are really focusing in on self-directed education in spaces outside of the home and how those spaces are rising up to meet the unique needs of the communities that they serve. So the focus is all on community care and stepping out of theory and into practice. This episode is a conversation I had with Cassidy Younghands, an educator and facilitator who taught in conventional classrooms for several years and then went on to intern in various SDE spaces and then went on to co-found a couple of programs. We discuss her experiences in Sudbury schools, agile learning centers, and liberated learner centers, and her takeaways in founding Wild Roots Learning Community. She tells us about their five-year plan to make the space a donation-based community hub for adult classes, food gatherings, offerings for youth that can't be self-directed or unschooled. It is a great conversation with a few strange sound glitches that were really bizarre, but I did my very best to mend those little bumps. So join me in welcoming Cassidy to the podcast. Cassidy, welcome to the Unschool Files podcast. I'm so excited to be speaking with you.
I'm so excited to be here, Megan. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me.
Yeah. Why don't you start by taking just a moment to introduce yourself to listeners and let them know about yourself just a bit and your connection to self-directed education.
Yeah. So I always wanted to be a teacher since I was a little kid. I became a public school teacher and I taught for 5 years in the public school system before about my fourth year realizing like this was not it for me. I had started learning about alternatives to traditional education and so saved up some money and then after my fifth year teaching left and spent some time in some different self-directed spaces around the United States, one being North Star in Massachusetts and another one being Houston Sudbury School in Houston, Texas, but spent a lot of time visiting a lot of different spaces to learn about just what's possible with young people and really finding like my passion in self-directed education. And so then really wanting to see like what can that look like in action and actually spend time interning at spaces for longer than just like visiting once or twice, but spending, you know, 3 and 4 months at spaces where I could really get to know the different models. And then came back to Dallas, Texas, where I'm born and raised and co-founded a learning community called EPIC that was around for 2.5 years. I was there for 2 years. The team that I was with at EPIC, we ended up pivoting a little bit away from the people that were funding EPIC. And so we created something new called Wild Roots Learning Community that now exists in Denton, which is a north suburb of Dallas, where we meet 2 days a week, all ages, and a self-directed learning community that, yeah, it exists. It's been open for we've been open for 2 years, but we've been in a consistent space meeting this past year. So fall and spring, and then coming up in the next, in fall, we will be meeting 3 days a week. So we're a growing learning community. But yeah, so that's what I do now is I facilitate there. And I also do some other work in different capacities to make that possible. But we're hoping for it to be a full 5 day week learning community and also eventually provide some community resources as well.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. And I can't wait to talk about Wild Roots. But first, let's back it all the way up to the internships. You mentioned North Star and Houston Sudbury. Tell me a little bit about those experiences there. Like, what stood out to you most about your experiences there?
Well, I was at Houston Sudbury School for about 4 months, and I actually got to live in the schoolhouse. So it was a house that I could live in and just would walk downstairs and all the kids would come every morning. And it was really an amazing experience. And I had great mentorship there with Kara DeBusk and Aria Grossman. Aria was actually a former student at a Sudbury school who then became a facilitator there. So I was learning from some of the most experienced people, I feel like, within the Sudbury world. And there was, again, it was mixed age environment, but it was the first time I'd ever been immersed in that, in a mixed age self-directed as far as like full choice of what you want to do with your day and your time. And I really got to just be present as another learner pretty much. Like I am an adult, obviously, but.
What do you think was unique about the Sudbury experience that's different from some of the other centers that you've been in?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing from what I saw in the Sudbury school that I visited, now I will say I understand that like Sudbury is a model and every school looks a little bit different. So I don't want to speak to all, but to the Sudbury school that I was in, there weren't any like class offerings. And I know in some other self-directed models, there are offered classes. It wasn't so much that way at the Sudbury School when I was interning there. So it was really just like the kids had just all day to just be, you know, fully immersed in one thing if they wanted to be all day long, which is true anyway. But I guess that would be a difference that I would note. And then another one would just be the school meeting and judicial committee. So I think sometimes the way that decisions are made in self-directed spaces is one of the things about models that make them really unique and different, is that Sudbury is very much like one child, one adult, everybody gets one vote. And you come to school meeting and you vote on different things, and that's how you make the rules within the community, kind of running it very like democratically.
Right.
So that was a really unique thing for me, because my vote, my say, my thought was the same as a four-year-old's might be.
Right. And how would that be different from how decisions are made at North Star?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think Ken's talked about this a little bit, and I think Blake playfully called Ken a benevolent dictator in Blake's essay, kind of describing Sudbury and liberated learners, because North Star is part of the liberated learners model. Mm-hmm. And so Ken is very much kind of like, you know, he holds space for all of these great kids that are 11 and up. And with that, they have community meetings where they're gathering and they're getting to know, you know, things about how North Star works and getting to give input and things like that. But I wouldn't say that they make the rules of North Star. Some input. Whereas at Houston Sudbury School, it was like they were voting on whether we were going to sell the school car. And how that would look, right? It's very different than like North Star, where it's more like, okay, maybe we can, you know, maybe it'd be good if we had a couple more guitars, and like they would ask for a guitar and see if that was possible. It's a little bit different than like being like, here's the budget, you know, making all those actual decisions. I think at the end of the day, Ken and the other staff there are really holding some of those decisions. And a lot of that too is because these are older kids. So sometimes I think a lot of the kids are there 1 or 2 days a week, versus at the Sudbury school that I was at, it was required that you were there 20 hours a week.
Right.
So it's also that's a big piece of why I think it's different. Everyone needs to be different.
The Sudbury schools kind of feel like a big family place almost.
Yes.
Where you just kind of like literally come in, take your shoes off, like run around with your shoes off all day.
Yes, it was literally a house.
Yeah. It's interesting when you're talking about like the school meeting and the judicial committee. And I was thinking about, so I've spent some time in Sudbury and I was going to say I facilitated in Sudbury. I was a staff member in a Sudbury school. And it was really, really interesting because the meetings were not all that attended, but then some discussions kind of started to happen around attendance, and some old Sudbury lore came out about, and I don't know how true this is, it was kind of a funny thing, and it was really just talking about low attendance at school meeting, but there's some Sudbury lore that a bunch of young people got together at a meeting that just was continuously, you know, not getting attended, and they pretty much like overthrew the school, like, you know, had fired everyone and like, you know, had done all, like made all these decisions basically because people were not participating in school meeting. And so it's just so funny, like when they are fully empowered within that structure that the Sudbury model provides, they could do some pretty radical things.
Yes. Yes, that is very true. And some very impressive things as well. And I will say, like, I think that was something that I struggled with, that kids wouldn't be at school meeting, but then decisions were being made that maybe would affect them. But I think there was, you know, and I understand like a lot of that is like, okay, you can come back and, you know, bring up a concern at the meeting if you weren't, you know, at a different meeting. But I did struggle with that, and that they were kind of, they could kind of go on. And for kids that are maybe 4, 5, and 6 really couldn't maybe focus during that, right. Those kinds of things. And even the language and the ways that the laws rules are made there can be kind of governmentally, which can be a little bit challenging for kids, I think, sometimes to fully grasp, especially when they're first starting at a Sudbury school. So I do feel like it can be a little bit challenging to get accustomed to the model and then actually be able to use your voice in a powerful way.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not very outgoing to like by nature.
Yeah. That's a really, really important note, I think, about Sudbury is Especially if you are totally new to it, like just catching on to the jargon and following Robert's rules of order and just watching these meetings just like boom, 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 boom. They just happen so fast. And you're just kind of watching like, whoa, it just takes a while to figure it out. And you're right. If you're not outspoken, you will just kind of, I mean, you probably won't attend a lot of the meetings. But I guess if you're observant and not outspoken and you really just want to be there to observe, it still is going to be really difficult for you to maybe have your voice heard or advocate for yourself if something were to impact you in a large way and you just weren't the kind of person that could speak in that kind of a forum. You know, it's very public,
Yes, it's
the
very raise your
forum.
hand and speak to the group, like you said. And it's very, I noticed when new kids would join, since I was there for about 4 months, that it would sometimes take a long time for them to learn all the current laws.
Right.
Because it's called a law book, right? So it's this huge book of like laws that are supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to be able to know and then follow. And then those laws change. And I would notice sometimes when kids would consistently not come to the meetings, they wouldn't even be aware of the law changing. And then they would get written up, which is what would happen, which what happens to, like, I guess, help hold the rules and
Yeah.
help hold each other accountable to those rules when maybe they didn't even know that was a rule, if that makes sense.
Right. Oh gosh, the writing up was one of the hardest ones for me. It was just like it was just like police, just like being cops, everyone being cops. I didn't feel right.
I very much struggle with, I think, that piece and then just the judicial committee piece, because it's so, I guess, echoing of the traditional criminal justice system we have in America, which I think most of us that are in this space know is broken. So it's hard for me to even use some of the same words, let alone like sometimes how those situations would then unfold would be very punitive, very shamey, very not restorative, depending on how it's done, right? But I definitely saw some of those pain points as well.
Yeah, definitely a challenge. But I think that these awarenesses can be brought up in community, and hopefully be talked about. I know that can present a challenge within Sudbury, just because the very nature of adults bringing up subject matter can kind of be seen as coercive. But I know there are other spaces who are shifting away from that a bit and shifting away from the judicial committee and going to a more restorative justice practice. So there are definitely some shifts happening. I'm excited to talk to more folks soon
Oh,
about
I'm
those
excited to
changes.
learn about that. Oh,
Yeah,
my
yeah.
goodness.
There's specifically one. I've actually already recorded the episode with the folks of Hudson Valley Sudbury School, and it's a great conversation. And they talk a lot about making these shifts away from the model toward things that are suiting their community a little bit better.
I had a very short opportunity. I got to visit there one day, but I even would say in my one day that they are a very unique, different from the Sudbury schools that I've visited, which is four. I felt like they were definitely thinking forward as far as like how can we continue to improve what we're doing, and bring in new tools and resources. I felt like they were very unique in that way, and I was very impressed by that when I was there. So really glad to hear that you're going to be talking with that you talked with them.
Yeah. I want to go and visit. I
You
want to
should.
visit this house. It sounds like it is a place where some really, really cool things happen. So some of these spaces, I guess, gave you a lot of your lens to moving into co-founding Epic Life. And you mentioned that it was a liberated learner model. And in previous private conversations, you had mentioned to me that you all coupled that with agile tools. Say more about that and what led to you doing that with those two frameworks.
Yeah. So, Liberated Learners model, what I love about it is it's really four tenets. You agree you're not a school. You agree you're not going to force kids or coerce kids to do things that they're not consenting to do. And I think that there's two more that are very simple, but they're very much like you're in community with young people in a way that is not school. And I very much learned a lot about offering classes that are all optional through the Liberated Learners model with North Star. It was amazing to see that they could have, you know, classes that are taught by taught by the learners, that are taught by outside volunteers and adults, that are based on learner interests, that kids are really excited to go to. So I felt like that was a really cool thing. And I know that's an element that's often existed in places like Summerhill and other places, but that's really what, I guess, planted the seed for offer classes that were optional and that were on the interests of the learners in our community. And so that's one of the main reasons why I really valued being a part of the Liberated Learners model. The other thing is mentoring. So Liberated Learners models strongly, you know, believe in mentoring. So like one-on-one opportunities for kids to meet with a supportive, loving adult to help them in whatever capacity they need or want. And if they don't want a mentor meeting, then they have that choice too. But that was kind of the two of the main things that I think I pulled from my experience at North Star were offering optional classes and mentoring. And then with Agile Learning, I was able to visit a few different spaces and intern at a couple of spaces that used Agile tools briefly. And I fell in love with the way that they built community. The community building processes of Agile are, I think, key. And, you know, they're open source, so everything is accessible, which was huge, of course, when you're starting something new. And so we used their community. Sometimes they call it community mastery board. Sometimes they call it community awareness board. But we used that as our tool to make all of the practice.
How do you decide on those practices in a Liberated Learner Center?
So, which simply meant we followed the idea that we're not a school and we're a member of the Liberated Learners Network, right? So we get guidance from them and things like that if we need that. But it doesn't, they don't counter each other, right? Because Liberated Learners, from what I visited, is mostly teens. And it is mostly like, again, kind of like what we mentioned, there's not the kids are not necessarily making all of the rules of what's happening. So I wanted to couple the optional classes and mentoring. We wanted to couple that with like, okay, how are we going to let the kids still, you know, make the decisions within the community? And how are we going to do things like conflict resolution, which with mixed age, right, where you've got ages 4 to ages 18, right, there's a lot more. And when you're together 5 days a week, which North Star, again, most of them were not, there's going to be a lot more conflict that's going to emerge. And there's going to be a lot more decision making that's going to be needed. And so we really valued the kids making the decisions in the community. I think that's something that I really did pull from Sudbury, honestly. Like, that's the root of that value, is it's their community. So that she gets to be a huge part of shaping it. And so then that's why we brought in the Agile tool of the community mastery board, where we made collective decisions. So we would have community meeting at Epic. We had a community meeting that was required. We asked everybody to go. And we also, of course, met kids where they were, right? If they were kids that were struggling with traditional school trauma, we weren't like, okay, here, sit down for 30 minutes. We found ways to meet them where they were and be flexible and help kids get to a place where they could be involved in a meeting that was something that was reasonable to ask of them, where they could make collective decisions together with supportive adults using the community mastery board tool from Agile. As well, we also used Agile tools of ways that we created contribution, of like ways we cleaned up at the end of the day. We used Agile tools with setting intentions and things like that. So just kind of pulling those kind of culture creation, I think, pieces from Agile were huge and beautiful way to build community. Highly recommend.
I love the way you all just fused that together and just brought in different ideas from all over. I think that's it's such a cool way to build a community that, you know, is unique to you. I feel like I'm just going to use the word unique a million times over this summer.
Yes.
Okay. So now Epic Life didn't end up staying open. So did you want to maybe speak about to maybe people who are thinking about opening a Liberated Learner Model Center or maybe one of the other many model centers. What are some things that people could take away from something having to shut its doors and not lasting?
Yes. Oh my goodness. And it is very hard because you're putting your heart into it, right? Any of us that are starting these things, like, I just want to say, first off, if you're wanting to start something like a self-directed space, like, I know you have a huge heart, right? Because you're able to, you want to do this hard work, but it is hard work. And it's work that sometimes requires you to look at the big picture and go, okay, do our values still align in what we're building? And if so, okay. And if not, how can we pivot in a way that can honor everybody? So Epic was an amazing opportunity. When I came back from my internship at North Star, I was looking to possibly have conversations with people about getting involved in a self-directed space that maybe already existed in the area or in Texas. And then it happened that someone was interested in funding a space, right? They had $100,000 and they were like, I will fund a space. Can you, if you want to co-create it with me and this one other person. And so that was a really big opportunity to take, right? What a beautiful, like, you know, resource to have. And when there's that level of money going in, right, that person has also has a really big buy-in. And sometimes I think we jump into things because there's the, you know, the resources there and the need maybe is there in the community. For us, there was a huge need for kids because the school was actually closing. A self-directed school was actually like moving. So it wasn't, a lot of kids were absent to school. So there was also that call, that kind of need that was there. So we kind of jumped into action and just started something. Like I literally got back in March and we opened in September. So wow. It was a huge, very quick jump in. And I would say, I think the big things are really going through almost every possible worst case scenario, to be very honest, with the people that you're co-creating with and making sure that you guys are in alignment with how you might tackle those things. Because I think that's really what kind of came up. COVID obviously was a really big thing, maybe for a lot of different self-directed communities in that way, where maybe it hadn't been something that was discussed before, as far as our values and alignment for community care versus like maybe individual freedom and things like that. And when those kinds of things come to the forefront, it can often make it so that projects or schools have to kind of break apart when those values aren't in alignment. And so for me, my recommendation is to go through every worst case scenario with the people that you're wanting to create something with and really flesh out what are the core reasons that you're all there in the first place and the reasons you're starting it before starting something with people. Because some people, whether they even know it or not, and maybe you need to be honest with yourself, right? Like, why are you starting it? But I think sometimes parents that are really interested start it and they don't quite realize that maybe it's more just for their kid than for maybe all kids. Right. So that's maybe one piece, or, you know, they're creating it more for like the individual freedoms instead of for maybe the collective. So there's no wrong reason for creating a self-directed space, but making sure that you have similar reasons and goals is key, because otherwise it will come out. It's just a matter of time. And it was a painful thing for us to close and for us to have to pivot and start something different. It was beautiful that we were able to start something different, but it was still very painful. And I wish that we could have found a different way to start it where it wouldn't have had to get like that.
Yeah. Okay. So you touched on individual freedom versus collective care. This is, you know, collective care, community care is the entire theme of this series of podcast episodes. And so maybe let's dig in the weeds a little more around individual freedom versus collective care. And maybe let's pick like a couple of things within these spaces. Maybe let's just go with like conflict and decision making. How differently can those things look in a space that's maybe individual freedom minded versus collective care minded?
Well, it's tricky. I mean, I've been in the spaces that I've created and then I've been in a couple of other spaces. And I would say for me, with the one-to-one direct democracy that exists in Sudbury, that's majority rules, right? And so I think that's an example of a framework that when is, you know, played out, it plays out as some people get what they need and some people don't.
Right.
And so to me, that's an example and an example of shifting that over to like a more collective mind. Everyone has to consent to the decision in order for it to move forward. And that's a hard process. It's not an easy process to do, but
yes, it is.
People can get there because then everybody can get their needs met, right? We don't want, okay, these seven kids are louder and are, you know, more pack mentality or whatever. So all of them get their need met. But then what about these other, you know, six kids?
Can you maybe walk listeners through how consent-based decision-making is made, like a small example of how you would come to a consent-based decision in a group of people?
People bring something to the community that's called an awareness, and they go, I'm aware that this is happening, whether it's bikes are being left in the walkway to the front door, right, as an example. I'm aware this is happening. Mm-hmm. So then we hear from people, okay, somebody's tripping over it when they're coming into the building. Or, ooh, the bike could get broken. Or, right, we brainstorm all of the things and kids come up with things you wouldn't even think of that are super valid needs. And then we start brainstorming, okay, what can we do about this? How do we want to address this as a community? And no idea is wrong. So we come up with all sorts of different ideas. So then kids can put their voice in and say, okay, here's what I think. Here are my ideas. And then it comes to like, okay, it seems like the most people are kind of interested in this idea. Can we call for consent? So then it would be a kid might say, I call for consent that we buy a bike rack. Can I see consent for that? And so we do thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, honestly, in our community, right? Thumbs up if you're okay to try that. Thumbs in the middle if you're kind of indifferent, which we take as you're willing to try, right? It's that willingness, but not necessarily enthusiastically excited. Mm-hmm. Or I do not consent. And then we really hear from the people that don't. And then sometimes it creates the opportunity for us to create a committee if there is a lot of concern, right? If there isn't this alignment on something that we all can consent to, can we create a committee to brainstorm more? And if it needs to go longer than, you know, 10 or more minutes or so, we want to delegate that to a committee to then try to come up with some other options to propose to the whole group.
So talk to me a little bit more about any other of the tools that we've already mentioned using in the other places, in the other centers that you've visited and interned in. What all have you brought into Wild Roots? What is in the concoction of tools in Wild Roots Learning Community?
Oh, wow. Well, definitely to what you said, restorative and transformative justice practices and frameworks around conflict resolution specifically, right? So restoring harm, we're very much not about shame or punishment or forced apologies or any of those crazy things. We're very much about authentic restoration. And so when it comes to conflict resolution, we believe that that stuff takes time. And we really let the kids lead the way as far as like knowing in their body how they're feeling, knowing when they're ready to have conversations with other kids, knowing when they need space for themselves, knowing when an issue with a conflict might be a bigger issue that's happening as a whole community and how can they address that. So we use transformative restorative practices with young people as far as when they're in conflict with each other or when they're having big emotions, how can they navigate that in a way that can reduce harm or can transform harm would be, I guess, another tool that I feel like we use very, very often.
And how many days a week did you say you all meet?
We are 2 days a week right now, but we intend to be 3 days in the fall. And our hope is to be a 5 day a week community. Kids would be able to come, you know, two or more days of their choice when we are a 5 day a week learning community. So it's not that every kid would be there every day, but I have a very strong pull to still be a place that kids from traditional school can come to if their parents can't like homeschool or do education in a different way because of work or whatever. So I want to be a 5 day a week community for kiddos that would need to be somewhere 5 days a week.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Do you see Wild Roots using the space in any after hours ways?
Yes. So we definitely, I think it's interesting because when we shifted out of Epic, I think we realized that there's so much more that's needed for families than just self-directed education for young people, right? There's a lot of these things that also echo into adults, right? I was telling you earlier, like I didn't draw anymore. I didn't make my own art at home, right? I was just working. And I wasn't learning new skills in the sense of like creative skills or things that weren't just right in front of me. And so we want to offer adult classes and we want to offer a space for a free food kitchen. And we would love to have community resources, even possibly like, family support, family services. One of our co-creators is a licensed social worker, but she's wanting to do it in a more self-directed way. And so being able to provide, you know, family support is definitely something we want to be able to do once we get bigger. So we want to be 5 days a week first as a learning community. And then our hope is to actually not just be a self-directed learning community for kids, but to be a hub for needs in general that is not betrothed to the government and or any kind of capitalism. We're very much a grassroots organization. So all of and through grants and donations, and our families do not pay tuition or anything like that. They simply donate what they can, almost like a donate what you can yoga class. And so we really value growing in that way. So it's going to be a slow process. So it might be, you know, 5-10 years before we end up being able to offer community services. But that is definitely something we want to do within our walls.
That's so exciting. And I could just see it being such a little gem for your community. And if more people would create these places and use these places. Have you heard of the concept of third spaces?
A little bit, but say more.
So third spaces are, I will totally butcher if I try to give you like a definition, but I've recently been learning about third spaces, and it was brought to me by someone else in the community who mentioned how schools, you know, public schools sort of monopolize the third space of people's time, because so third spaces are a space you would spend time in outside of where you live and where you work. And they used to be, you know, in promenades, in city centers, in, you know, places where you would gather and you didn't even necessarily have to spend money. And so there's not a lot of that anymore, especially, in North America. You know, cities are not necessarily neighborhood walkable, you know, in that way where they fit the community needs. I mean, you might find little pockets of it, but it's not kind of like, you know, like in Europe where there's a city center in every city or village, and school occupying right. a lot of our time and third space ability through sports and, you know, recreational stuff and, you know, dances and all the things that school does. Not to say that those things are good or bad, but just school kind of monopolizes all of that extra family time and space, and that we need more third spaces where we can come together to just be with each other, to, you know, serve people food, you know, to sit in gardens, to walk through labyrinths, you know, to in all types of things. Like, they don't need to be things that necessarily are a place where you sell something or rent out your space to make more money, you know, through classes to help offset the cost of rent or whatever, although I think that is helpful as well. I think you can kind of find multiple ways to use your space as a community third space, you know?
Oh, 100%. That resonates so much with me, because I definitely feel like, you know, SDE 0 to 100, right? Self-directed education for mm-hmm. all ages, I think, is really something that we see it growing into, as far as like if we offered adult classes, they would all be donation-based as well. And in that same sense of like really just having a place where people can feel safe to come and be, like you said, I think that's huge.
Yeah, I got a lot of these ideas, actually. I have to give credit to a colleague of mine who I worked in Sudbury with as a fellow staff member. And he was finding unique ways to keep our school afloat, and was coming up with any and everything he could think of, you know, reaching out to people who were screening films at a building down the street who were looking for a new place to screen films, for, you know, to run AA and NA meetings out of the cafeteria space, you know, to have musicians come and do practice in the sanctuary space, like just finding any way that we could to help keep the school afloat, but also providing a space for, you know, different groups that, you know, some of them would be paying, you know, to help rent out space and offset the cost of our rent and keep our school afloat. And some of them would be truly just the needs of the community, and offering up a space for a new AA meeting, you know, to come and use the space or whatever. So I love the fact that, you know, we have these spaces that we're renting out maybe, or maybe people own, or, And they sit unused for many hours out of the day, and they could be used as a community hub for a lot of things.
Right. We rent currently from a church 2 days a week. So that's definitely one of the things that we hope in some point in the future is to have a space that is mostly ours, so that we can really be a community center in that way, where you can have those open hours that we can use however makes most sense for the, you know, the needs of our community.
Yeah. I have to give like a shout out to the pastor at the church that our school was renting from, actually, in Austin, Texas. Pastor Mandy is like the most progressive pastor ever. and was willing to partner with us in any and every possible, you know, scheme that we had to try to help keep the school afloat at the time. So it's really cool to partner with people like that in the community. And she saw a need for people in the community to be able to use this space. So it's cool when you can find those kinds of partnerships too.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely will say, like, I'm not a religious person by any means, but I also feel like specifically Unitarian Universalist churches and churches with a similar mindset as far as following your own path or some more open-minded churches are definitely like, they get where we're coming from and what we're trying to do.
For sure.
Supportive.
Yeah, I honestly had no experience with a lot of these religious organizations because I'm not religious either. And this particular church is part of a greater presbytery. And I learned so much about how their entire church structure is like very similar to the way Sudbury structure runs, everything voting and committees. And so they happened, and this was many years before I ever came on board, that they partnered with this church. And so they saw an alignment there in sort of the democracy piece. And that is how they partnered with each other. And then over the years, you know, they maintained a really good relationship with one another. And the school, I think, really, really kind of kept the church going, to be honest. And I came on during COVID because the school had been closed for COVID and they needed to reopen. And I came on to help reopen the school. And so it was a whirlwind and there was so much. And so when you were speaking about new kids coming in and being fresh with learning all of this, I was just nodding my head along because I have that experience of reopening this school and lots, you know, we had opened the doors and a lot of the folks who were in the school prior did not return. And it was a bunch of new people. I want to say maybe 80% completely new to Sudbury, maybe even 80%, maybe like 70% completely new to self-directed education and unschooling, like that whole
notion. Wow.
So bunch of new kids in this space. Their parents, you know, were excited. I think the young people were excited. They saw, you know, freedom, an excellent park, you know, lots of opportunities for things to do. And we're just like, yeah, let's do it. But it is really, really hard to not have like an onboarding process, I think, for newcomers into this model, especially if you have a sudden influx of more newcomers than not.
That's a great, yes, yes, that piece, right? Because if you have a solid foundation of kids who really understand how to use the system that's exist, that, you know, whether it's Sudbury or for us, agile tools, right? For right. Whatever way to put their voice into the community and make things happen and learn and, you know, make the community what they want it to be. You got to have kids that know how to do that, a good amount of them, so that when you bring in a few new ones, they have people that can show them and they also and models, and that then you still have the capacity to help kind of bridge that gap of understanding while the other kids continue to run the thing, you know?
Definitely, for sure. And we definitely had some young people who knew the rules inside and out and were prepared to do that. But the balance was just at that time, the balance was just not quite there with the newcomers. And it was just a huge, huge challenge. And I don't think the model entirely lends to being very agile. But in human relationship, I do think it's really important to say in human relationship, even if the model isn't lending to that, we can like look each other in the eye and be like, bro, this isn't working. Like, right. Like right. This is, what we're doing here is not working. What are we going to do about this? And sometimes I think that's just what it takes, you know?
Yeah, definitely being married to the people that you're wanting to help serve, not the model.
Right.
And not just being married to your own personal ideals, but being able to see where those ideals aren't actually meeting the needs and then pivoting. And like you said, being agile within that is huge. And one more thing I wanted to say about kids coming into a self-directed space from either public school or even from unschooling or from not an unschooling background. I think sometimes kids need time to unschool without community so that they can decide if they want to be in a community. I think it depends on the kid, but I think when we pull kids out of traditional school and we just look for somewhere else to put them and we decide to put them in a self-directed space, they need time to like decompress from all of the things that have been happening. And then choose to actively be a part of a community. Because if you're not choosing to be a part of the community and you're just being dropped off there, right, that's still not self-directed. So I think that that's a huge piece when it comes to bringing on new kids, is to also recognize, like, yes, that somebody might want to come, but they might need some time to really, like, decompress first, or really decide, like, what does it mean for them to be a part of a community, and do they want that yet? Are they ready for that yet?
Absolutely. And I think in any self-directed space that's really prioritizing the partnership with those young people over, you know, the model or whatever desired framework that they intend to use, I think they're going to see that that someone might just need a little more rest. Someone might just need a little more time off to the side. Someone might just not want to participate in some of the, I was going to say ritualistic, but that's probably not the word I want to use. But, you know, the regular everyday things that happen in the center, they might just need some time to kind of observe that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Circling back around to you mentioning that you were a teacher, let's shift gears just a bit, because, you know, I reached out to you in the middle of COVID, and you were substituting at the time. I wanna say that I remember so many of your Instagram stories just being like the absolute absurdity of how they were handling like the mass exodus of educators and these teens like sitting around in gyms with nothing to do. Talk to me a little bit about your connection to public schooling when you went back for substituting for a bit.
Yeah, well, gosh, it was a good reminder that is not the space for me. And honestly, to me, it's not the space for any young people. Like, I'm just going to be honest, right? Like, I don't want to pretend like I think school is good for anybody. And it was very frustrating to me. So a young lady was looking for her backpack. She was walking around the school looking for her backpack. She couldn't find it. She had put it down in the hallway and went to the bathroom and was coming back to get it. And it wasn't there. And that's because an administrator had decided, oh, someone left their backpack. She shouldn't have left it. I'm going to take it and I'm going to hide it. So not only did this administrator take the backpack, but then hid it behind a trash can and then like waited for this girl to frantically come looking for it again and then let her keep looking, and she was like, oh, I don't know where it is, even though she hid it from her. And then I had to literally, I was like, I can't take this. And I was like, it's behind the trash can. Like, no, I'm not watching this and not saying something. And the thing that I was expecting was for the young lady to be outraged, right? Be like, whoa, why would you do that to my backpack? That's my belongings. Like, that's not okay. But she just like shrugged it off like it was nothing, which was so much worse to me because it showed that they're just used to being treated like that by adults.
Oh, yeah.
But if they had touched the administrator's stuff, right, that would have been a call to like the you know, police on site.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So the reason I wanted you to speak a bit about this is because these are the kinds of young people and teenagers who are leaving school and coming to these alternative spaces. And the rest that I think we spoke about that they might need is because of this. Like, it's because of having to experience, you know, that like, it's so subtle the way that they're conditioned. And I don't want to speak as if everybody is walking around experiencing, you know, just incredibly low self-worth and schools just beating them into a ground. I realize that that's not every young person's experience. And some people are surviving it better than others, or playing the game better than others, or are just naturally better at the game than others.
Mm. Yes.
But it's not good. This is not good for them.
No. And then to expect for me to expect a child coming from that situation to come into Wild Roots, to come into, you know, the self-directed learning community and feel any trust with me.
Yeah.
Or even feel agency or the ability to actually make change or advocate for themselves in any way, because they literally are having their backpacks hidden from them by adults.
I just don't understand the level of shame that is like that is permitted in spaces with admins and educators. I don't understand like why that's permitted. I don't understand. I mean, I understand that, you know, educators can be really burnt out, and maybe they vent, or I don't know. I try to see multiple truths all at the same time. I mean, I'm very aware that school houses millions and millions of children who have nowhere else to go in the day. And so it is a very necessary system that we do have to navigate. And so I'm constantly asking myself, like, as much as I advocate for these alternative spaces and the need for giving youth their autonomy and helping advance the liberation of all people and including youth liberation in that, I also very much recognize that that system is going to exist. It's not going away anytime soon. And as long as we live in the kind of society we live in, and people have to work at the level that they have to work to be able to even make ends meet, school is kind of the only option for this huge population of young people. And there has to be ways that we can implement change. I always like to ask people, especially those who were previous educators, like what could you see that could be implemented? Are there maybe tools from these alternative spaces that could be implemented or are scalable in the larger schooling system?
Oof, that's a great question. I want to go back for just one second but I want to answer this question. Just to talk about the educators in this space, because I will say in that moment when this administrator was hiding this young lady's backpack, I almost felt like it wasn't going to be okay for me to tell her where it was. So there's this pressure from the whole environment to even the educators that are in there that really care about the kids and really love them and want to help and don't necessarily want to behave in these ways. You're kind of pressured to behave in these ways or to at least like not speak up, right? In the same way that young people are. I feel like that's what I love about Joel Hammond's book, Teacher Liberation, because I think a lot of teachers, whether they know it or not, are still just as much being oppressed, but in a different way of like what they would normally be like with young people. It's a really hard question of like why, you know, sometimes educators make the choices that they make, but I will just say there's a ton of pressure involved. Like, I think it wasn't until my last year teaching in public school that I said, do not ask me to go to the bathroom. Just go to the bathroom if you need to go to the bathroom. Just tell me so I know if there's a fire, right? But just go. But it took me 4 years. So you get a ton of pushback from within the system, even if you try to do something. So to what you're asking about, if anything is scalable or if anything is possible within the traditional system, I really struggle with that because I think it really does need to start with like, I think it starts small. I don't know if consent-based decision-making can happen at that level, right? Same thing with, I feel like we've decided, right? Like the United States first is a big example of this, right? Like this massive federal government that's making all these decisions for all of these states that have their own culture needs, have their own, you know, natural disaster needs.
Yeah, I honestly can only think of one possible thing, and I even struggle to suggest it because there's kind of this duality of bringing in a ton of adults, but my idea is to bring in a ton of adults, and these adults don't need to be educators. They can be carpenters and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can infer what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. Right? Like people who have different skill sets. And of course, I'm sure there's, you know, would need to be a process for vetting people who are in partnership with the schools, but getting more adults in the spaces so that we could offer more self-directed opportunities within schools, like offering young kids the opportunity to choose whether they want to do like marine related science or if they want to do like, you know, they want to learn only about animals that live in the jungle or, you know what I mean? Like to provide more options. And this, like, I think maybe like the notion of how high schoolers get to select their course study, like, I think bring that down all the way to young people, very, very young people. Give them more opportunities and choice, and not artificially, but, like, actually give them opportunity and choice, and bring in more adults into the schools to partner with all having all of these opportunities. And, yeah, it would just bring more options. But then the opposite side of that is that you just have, like, a ton more obviously very conditioned adults in the space that like really is not advancing youth liberation when adults are just adulting, you know, on these kids.
Exactly.
So you'd almost need like a foundational training on like how not to oppress kids.
Right. 100%. I really like your idea. As far as I do, I will say, like, I think in self-directed spaces, there's definitely a way lower ratio, right, of kids to adults. That's been my experience, right? Like, I think at Wild Roots, we're like 1 to 7 or maybe 1 to 5. So there's a lot more adults to support those individual interests and needs. And like, that could provide a lot more opportunities for each kid that in that school system, right, to have a lot of different supportive adults that are available that aren't just like shepherding 30 kids from room to room, but are actually able to sit down one-on-one with you and chat with you about what you're interested in and then bring resources in to make that more possible. I think that's definitely a good idea. And I would couple that with maybe training them almost more, not necessarily like as full self-directed education facilitators, but maybe just more as a librarian mindset. You come and you use the resources and you learn what you want to learn, and the librarian's there if you have any questions. Little bit more of, if we could bring in even just the librarian more mindset, would be helpful, I think.
I love that you say library, and I think train station. This is funny to me. So maybe it's a hybrid of like a library train station. So like, here's my vision. Okay. You're walking into the school and you're walking down this major hallway that has that classic school smell. Everyone that's listening knows that smell. They're walking down and it has that classic smell. And at the very end of the hallway, before you can either choose to go left or right, there's a massive board on the wall that looks like one of those train station boards where it's like got all of the different platforms and where you're going to go. But instead of destinations for places on a train, Kay, are you following? It's an Agile Learning Center board with offerings, and you choose what room you want to go to. And my idea of having all the adults brought in offers up so many more opportunities, because there's now, you know, more adults to kids. And they can like sign up to have their choices maybe solid and they're like firm for the year, or they can like switch it up maybe from week to week, or maybe they have A days and B days with what's on the board. Like, I'm telling you, some of these tools, they can be scalable.
I mean, that's what we do at Wild Roots. It's a big board of offerings, like you said.
It could be super cool, but it would have to have like, they would have to light up and stuff like an actual train station board, because that makes it cool.
I agree. 100% agree with you there.
Oh, this was such a good conversation, Cassidy. Thank you so much for spending all of this time with me. I know we're coming up on time now, so I want to be able to let you get on with your day. But before we go, do you have any final notes or things that you want people to think about or chew on, or at least where people can find you?
Well, definitely. I can start where people can find me. People can find me at CassidyYoungHands.com or Cassidy Alice on Instagram or Facebook. It's just Cassidy Younghands. You'll find me. There's really only one.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Cassidy. I appreciate everything that you do and for carving out all of this time with me and sharing so much and being so transparent about all of the different experiences that you've had. I think it's really going to help give people a good lens on how some of these models work and some more nuances on how they have actually kind of panned out in practice instead of in theory. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of this series. Thank you, Cassidy, for spending this time with me and working through our glitches and internet magic. I truly appreciate you. If anyone had any takeaways from this episode or are thinking about starting a space and are looking to fuse different approaches in their own community, I would love to hear from you. Next time, you will hear from the folks over at Hudson Valley Sudbury. You're really going to want to listen to this one. It's big. But please, before you go, if you are interested in supporting my work, I would love to have you partner with me over on Patreon. The Unschool Files podcast and all of the other projects that I have my hands in are truly a labor of love, so your support means so much to me. And I have so much more that I want to bring to you, many more different types of series on different topics, so I would really, really appreciate the support. If you are looking for community in your unschooling, please head to theunschoolfiles.com and there will be a link there to join the Discord server. We have so many events and opportunities for face-to-face connection and chatting. It is a global community. There are people in every time zone, and slowly the members are kind of ramping up the events. So it's a really, really cool thing to see. Last thing, issue 5 of the zine is out. So please go secure your copy, digital, print, your choice. Head over to theunschoolfiles.com/zine for a copy. Thank you so much for taking this time to be with me. And until next time, stay kind to each other.